this time, the Resettlement Administration presents another in a series of programs illustrating the work of this government service in assisting needy farmers and in conserving our land resources.
In this year, 1936, America is faced with the necessity of developing a new attitude toward land. The slogan of the 60s was, Uncle Sam has land enough to give us all a farm. Uncle Sam was rich in land during that era of expansion. But many land operators were prodigal in their use of land and gave scant thought to the future. They failed to anticipate this 20th century when much of the soil would be exhausted from misuse. To understand more fully the agricultural attitude of America in the 60s, we resurrect from the past the Honorable Galusha A. Grow, Speaker of the House of Representatives during one of the most troubled periods of our nation's history, the years 1860, 1862. Mr. Grow was an unselfish public servant with a fixed idea, the idea that American land belonged by right to the American people. But there were less public-spirited citizens in that year 1861 who had other ideas.
I'd like a word with you, Mr. Grow.
You have the advantage of me, friend. I don't believe I'm acquainted with you. Your name?
The name doesn't matter. I've come to give you a few plain words of advice.
I don't like your tone, stranger.
That doesn't matter either. I've come to warn you that if you care anything about your political future, or if you value your life, you'll stop agitation for that homestead law.
Meaning?
Well, I'd advise you to be warned in time, Mr. Grow. My clients don't like your proposal that this land be given to the people.
You may give your clients this message from me. I've spent the 10 years of my political life working for the homestead law. And even if I should be elected president someday, I'd still feel that I had been a failure if I did not save the vast territory west of the Mississippi from selfish, non-resident purchasers.
Take care, Mr. Grow. You won't be warned again.
And I say to you and your clients, as I shall say in the House of Representatives this morning, I care nothing for your threats. The public lands belong to the people and must not be granted to corporations or individuals who do not intend to develop that land. This great and fertile territory of the West must be held as a sacred trust for the benefit of the American people. I bid you good morning, stranger.
Insisted fearlessly in his efforts to secure the great West for the people. Finally, on May 26, 1862, the Homestead Act became a law. This act provided that any head of a family or anyone 18 years of age who would remain on the soil and develop it for 5 years was entitled to 160 acres free. In 1863, the race for land was on. Those who sponsored the act were sincere in their conviction that every man had a right to the soil, but they failed to anticipate a day when America's frontier would be gone and did not foresee the results of wrong use and overuse of the soil. The year 1890, the scene... the city room of a New York daily newspaper.
Hey boy, right, come on here. Pick up the
Hollins.
Coffee.
Hollins.
Yes, sir.
Come here.
Yes, sir. Is something wrong, sir?
Wrong. Now, what in the name of common sense is the idea of handing me a four-column story on a bulletin from the Bureau of the Census?
Well, I'm sorry, sir. I thought it was important.
Oh, you did. And will you please tell me what's important about a batch of figures on the population of the United States?
Well, I didn't mean that the figures themselves were so important, sir. It's that one statement.
What statement?
That one, sir. The public domain is fully occupied. The function of the Homestead Act has been fulfilled.
Oh, I see. You thought that would make front page? Double spread?
Yes, sir, I did. You see, to a student of economics, it's of vital importance. No more public domain. No more free land. America's frontier gone.
And who, may I ask, cares? It's worth two paragraphs on the last page. People buy our paper for news, and that's what you're here for. To give them what they want.
I'm sorry, sir. To me, it's the biggest news of the week or of the year.
Now, listen, Collins. I promised your uncle I'd try to make a reporter out of you. I can see it's going to be a hard job. But he's a good friend of mine, so I'll try. Sit down.
Yes, sir.
Now, here are some copies of our paper for the past couple of weeks. And these are the stories that rated a full column or more. Now, just sit still and listen.
New York City, January 2nd, 1890. Headline, Wine at Society Ball. The Board of Police Commissioners declared yesterday that Ward McAllister's New Year's ball at the Metropolitan Opera House would be regarded in the same sense as any other public ball, and that the use of liquors must be stopped at 1 a.m. Today, our reporter obtained an exclusive interview with New York social leader Mr. Ward McAllister.
Mr. McAllister, our readers would like to know whether the police commissioner enforced his ruling last night that champagne must not be served after 1 o'clock.
No, I'm happy to say that the ruling was not enforced. I explained to him that an exclusive society affair could never be considered a public ball. You might explain to the readers of your paper that it was certain members of the codfish aristocracy, upstarts who were not invited, who were responsible for that first ruling.
Thank you, Mr. McAllister. Would you say that the ball last night was a success?
Modesty prevents my expressing my opinion, but it was the unanimous conviction of prominent members of society that it was an unqualified success.
One more question, Mr. McAllister. I hear that your invitation list included more than the usual 400 guests. Is that so?
It most certainly is. Last night's ball enlarged the circle of society. I was determined to do away with that nonsensical 400 idea. Our invitations went to 1,500 people, and I am convinced that no family which should expect to be invited was slighted.
Thanks, Mr. McAllister. That's a front-page story. Last night's ball enlarged the circle of New York society from 4 to 1,500.
Now, Collins, there's a news story. That was front page news for 3 days. That's the sort of thing our readers want. Here's another.
Washington, D.C., January 4th, 1890. Headline, an Oriental box party. Mrs. Sin Kuo Yin, wife of the Chinese ambassador, put her foot down today. It is a very small foot, but it made a big impression. This gracious Chinese lady explained her daring deed at the request of our Washington correspondent.
In America, I desire to do like the women of America. It is a fearful step I take today. My noble ancestors would not approve, but my husband is wise and modern, and he says yes.
What is this fearful step, Mrs. Sin Yin?
Today I shall go to the matinee. For the first time in my life, I shall appear in public.
I should say this bold step of yours will be a long stride toward the emancipation of the Chinese woman. May I print that, Mrs. Yin?
Yes. It is for the sake of all Chinese women that I take this forward step.
And that was another front page story, Collins. Are you beginning to see what's news and what's not?
Yes, sir. That Chinese story is important because it may have far-reaching results, but I still think...
I'm doing the talking. You listen. Now, here's an example of the lighter type of news story, and yet it's important, too. It may revolutionize women's clothes.
New York City, January 3rd, 1890. Headline, The Startling Rainy Daisy Skirt. Miss Daisy Miller of this city caused a sensation today by appearing bravely on the streets with an abbreviated skirt which revealed her ankles. Miss Miller, a modest young lady whom our reporter interviewed near the Flatiron Building, explained her reasons for defying convention.
I am not wearing this ankle-length skirt to attract attention. I intend to wear it only on rainy or snowy days. And I believe that before many years have passed, every sensible lady in this country will do the same thing.
I'm only a mere man. But I've always wondered why ladies' skirts trail the ground.
It is, of course, far more modest, sir, for a lady to conceal her ankles. But it isn't common sense for our skirts to sweep the streets in wet weather. And I might add that for bicycling, I feel that a lady should never be accused of immodesty if she wears this type of skirt, reaching only to her ankles.
It looks sensible to me. I'd venture to predict that your rainy day skirt will sweep the country.
This is all front-page stuff, Collins. Now, here's one more.
London, England, January 8, 1890. Headline, Balfour proposes land purchases in Ireland. In the House of Commons today, Mr. Balfour, Chief Secretary for Ireland, introduced a bill for the purchase of land in Ireland and for the improvement of the poorer and more congested districts. Mr. Balfour said, in part,
I shall have many opponents of this bill. There will be widespread disapproval of excluding the landlord class from rural social life. But I believe that every party is agreed as to the necessity for increasing the number of occupying owners in Ireland.
Well, I won't go on, Collins. I haven't time. Here, take back this Bureau of the Census story and cut it down to about 3 paragraphs. We'll work it in somewhere on a dull day.
Yes, sir, but there's one thing I don't quite understand, sir.
What now?
I don't see why that Balfour story about the purchase of land in Ireland should be any more interesting to Americans than this story I wrote. The warning that our public domain is fully occupied. Don't you see, sir? It means that the American people will have to acquire a totally new point of view about the use and ownership of land. Our frontier is gone. I guess I'm more interested than most people because I was brought up on a farm.
Oh, you are, were you? Well, listen to me, my boy. If you don't develop a nose for news and do it in a hurry, that's where you're going to find yourself next week. Back on that farm.
The announcement made by the Bureau of the Census in 1890 was buried on the inside pages of newspapers and was virtually unnoticed. It was not until the year 1933 that the American people became acutely aware that there was no new land to replace the soil which had become barren through years of improper use. The American people as a whole are still not conscious of the appalling fact that today there are 83 million acres of devastated or poorly stocked forest land, 165 million acres of seriously depleted grassland, and 35 million acres of land virtually destroyed by erosion. On this land, there are thousands of honest, hard-working farmers who have found themselves sinking more deeply into debt each year as a result of drought, dust storms, exhausted soil, and other forces over which they have no control. Your government, through the Resettlement Administration, seeks to help these destitute farm families find the security, the financial independence, and the place in the life of their community that is the heritage and birthright of every American citizen.
Have been listening to one of a series of programs presented by the Resettlement Administration. If you are interested in the work of this government service and desire further information, write to the Resettlement Administration, Washington, D.C.